It's time for Twig. This week in Google, fasten your seatbelts. A great discussion for you all about the Reddit troll coming up, the filter bubble, and Google Zeitgeist. Why weren't we invited? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 168, recorded October 17th, 2012. I've got Amazon in my trunk. This Week in Google is brought to you by Ford, featuring available sync. Now you can control your media player with simple voice commands. Enjoy your drive while you easily search and listen to your favorite songs. Check it out on the 2012 Ford Focus and at ford.com/technology. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile responsive designs. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, visit squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG10. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google and the Cloud and the Metaverse and all that stuff. Gina Trapani is here from smarterware.org, thinkup.com, founding editor of Life Hacker. Great to see you, Gina.
Great to see you too. Happy
from
Wednesday.
San Diego. Look, you know, you seem chipper. I guess Etta is sleeping through the night.
Oh, my wife did the late night meeting, so I got a full night's sleep. I feel great today. I feel like a new woman.
You never appreciate sleep so much as when you have a newborn baby.
Every other day, I get a good night's sleep.
Good.
We switch off, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I know that
she's
feeling.
Napping, but I'm doing great.
Yay. Also here, Jeff Jarvis. Jeff, like me, probably hasn't had a good night's sleep in years.
No.
The kids grow up, and then you're just old.
Yeah.
It's no longer, you can't blame the kids anymore.
The night and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's like they trained you to wake up. And then they grow up and sleep till like 1 in the afternoon. And you're up at 6 a.m. going, where's your mamie?
Wife still gets up earlier than I do, but I go to bed a lot later than working. Last two days, I was at work from 7 a.m. to 11:30 p.m.
Oh, man.
And you've got stamina, Jeff.
Is that your professoring, or is it something else that you're doing?
Just stuff adds up, events. I did a talk last night for a new company called Together, which enables authors to organize their own events, which is very cool. So how was I to say no? It was a wonderful thing they did. So I was there. And then the debate came on, right? I rushed to get into my car, which I parked in New York, so I could listen to the debate. I realized listening wasn't good enough, so I pulled off on the turnpike at a rest stop, which is a depressing thing to do in New Jersey, and watched it on my Nexus 7 the whole time, sitting there in the parking lot and tweeting like some kind of crazed fool. And so I get home late. I'm still wired, and I'm to bed late and up at 5:30.
Together sounds like 10 you proposed on this show, the idea that authors could sort of organize their own book tours, Jeff. So it's kind of like one of your ideas come to life.
Which is very cool. Yeah, they when they get depressed, they say, well, we look at this blog post you wrote, and we say, well, this guy says it's a good idea. it's a very cool guy who worked on the prior Mars expedition and wrote a book about it. Or really wrote a book about it and was embedded in it. And after his book tour and the mess that it is, he decided to start this company called Together, which is a cool name. Mm-hmm. And they have, I think, 4 or 5 employees now. And they're enabling authors to either sell books or get gate fees or do it for free or go with companies to these events. And we talked more about new ideas last night. It's very cool. It's very neat, to see something come like that come alive.
Nice. But
speaking of Mars, we have
what a transition
coming up next show, Triangulation. We are going to talk to the lead scientist on the Curiosity mission.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a great interview.
I can't
Good
wait.
Yet.
So exciting. Yeah. Thank you to, I think it was Karsten Bondi who got that. So thank you, Karsten. Nice job.
Next week you'll have Felix Baumgartner probably.
We're trying. We talked to actually on Twit on Sunday. Right after the jump, we talked to Scott Gillies, who was the production manager, the guy who got the video and all the stuff Because that was, to me, that was the most amazing. You know, falling out of a balloon, I mean, brave, but it's really, the achievement was all the technology around it was pretty amazing.
Absolutely.
So, Scott, in fact, if you didn't hear that interview, it's in the beginning of Twit from last Sunday. Scott Gillies was, I can't remember what his exact title was, something like lead production manager or something like that.
If you just mention that event, my palms start pouring.
I know.
I confess, when I was up visiting Twit, that now I'm amid this the whole world, there was a barrier between me and getting to Twit, which is my fear, my worsened fear of bridges.
So you get like nervous when you're on a bridge? Are you afraid it's going to collapse?
Or I'm going to go over the edge or something. It's vertigo, right? But it's weird. I've never liked them, but I've gotten worse in the last couple of years. And so, and the anticipation of knowing that I had to go over the Golden Gate to get to you, Leo, you matter so much to
me.
Wow.
Eve, yeah, it's
that's
anxiety.
That's an interesting, it's a phobia, I guess.
Do you get dizzy, Jeff? Do you actually get dizzy, or does the vertigo is just the kind of the fear of the height?
I have to breathe deep to not, like, my fear is that I'll pass out.
Right.
But I never passed in my life, but. And besides that, doctor.
First time everything.
And, of course, it's earthquake country, so and were you here in 89 when the bridge fell in? I shouldn't bring this up.
Yeah, I just, you know. Ixnay on the
never mind, I didn't say a thing. What bridge? What earthquake?
I'm not going over that other bridge.
There hasn't been, good news, there hasn't been an earthquake in New York City in about 150 years.
That's the problem when you're from the East Coast and you come to the West Coast. Like, one of my family's big arguments was like, but there are earthquakes there.
Yeah.
Like, how, you know. So don't add that.
I believe there's a fairly hefty fault going right through Manhattan. I may be wrong. But historically, Manhattan is not free of earthquakes.
Son Jake said he experienced his first earthquake in Boston.
Yeah. This summer there was an earthquake in Boston. Is that weird? So, just want you to know.
So it's this week in our neuroses.
All right, let's talk about Google, and we're going to start with our new feature, Gina Trapani, with the change log.
The Google change log.
Hey.
It really is overdoing it, I think.
Beautiful.
Man, that is such a cool intro. I love it.
So we started this last week, and thanks to who did the intro?
The intro audio was made by Jesse Weisner, and then I made the video animation.
You did that? Thank you.
Great.
Very cool, Chad.
So we decided that we talk about Google, but maybe we should just every week summarize all the new stuff, because there's always something new from Google.
There's always new product updates.
Yeah.
Some of them minor, but we like to run down the list. This week, we've got drag and drop up to upload folders in Google Chrome to Google Drive. So you've had the ability to drag a file into Chrome in order to add it to your drive, but now you can drag and drop an entire folder. You just have to be using the latest version of Chrome to do that. And of course, you can use the Chrome desktop app as well. Android Jelly Bean 4.1.2. It's the incremental upgrade we talked about last week. It was rolling out over the air to the Nexus 7. This week, it's rolling out to the Nexus S and the Galaxy Nexus. It's mostly performance updates, stability improvements, bug fixes, but the one change you will notice is that the home screen and the lock screen will rotate into landscape mode. Right now, it's just, see, Jeff has it. He's showing on the screen there.
Yeah, I got it on my Nexus 7 yesterday, I think. And I was
So I haven't gotten on my Galaxy Nexus yet, but it should be coming out to the Galaxy Nexus. This is why you want a Nexus, folks. I've been tooting the Nexus horn for a while now. You get all the new stuff sooner. Google Street View increased its coverage by 250,000 miles in its biggest update yet. They also doubled their number of special collections. New Street View coverage in a bunch of different countries, Macau, Singapore, Sweden, Thailand, Taiwan, the U.S. If you go to maps.google.com/streetview, you can take a tour of their new stuff. They've got a cool little dynamic page there that Leo's showing us. And finally, our friend Matt Cutts introduced a webmaster tool. This is more for web publishers than developers, but kind of interesting in the link economy to point out. It's called Disavow Links. If your site has been linked to by sites of ill repute or spammy links, and your site is suffering from, you know, search engine ranking, you know, it's getting ranked lower because it's got these spammy links, and you haven't been able to get those links removed from those sites, you can actually go to this tool, say disavow these links. You can upload a text file of domains and URLs where these bad links are coming into your site and say, hey, we want nothing to do with them. And there's a nice video from Soaring, our friend Matt, to explain disavow links a little bit more.
So, Gina, is there any kind of automated way to let you know who the bad linkers are so that you can kind of, is it a very manual process?
So this hasn't happened to me, but I think that as a webmaster, like you will get a notification from Google, like if you've been demoted because you've got links from sites that have been,
but who reads their email? Come on.
Well,
really.
I don't know. I'm not sure if it's an email notification or if it's like a Google Analytics notification or what, but I believe that webmasters are, this hasn't happened to me, but I believe that you are notified when you're suffering from, you know, demotion because of sites of ill repute.
Yeah, because all your users say, I don't see you on the Google anymore.
Right. Well, right.
Where'd you go?
So you do get an idea. I think those sites do get pointed out to you if they're particularly bad.
Hmm.
But I get the impression that this is a fairly manual process right now. I mean, you have to make a text file and upload it to this tool.
Oh.
So you have to care and be paying attention in order to use this tool.
And we also have an alternate open from a guy named Alter. Itai Alter. Should I play it?
Well, here, I have it here.
Okay, let's see it. I like that. That's a little more classy.
The other one is
a
little.
I'd say that's the outro. We have an intro and an outro.
We could easily do that.
Whereas the first one is more like a TNT video, right?
Right.
And remember, this is the show that begins with doo 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 doo. It's a more classy kind of a show. It's a more classical kind of a show.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's genius.
I agree. Well, let's check this one out again.
Let's see. Now, of course, the problem with this one is if you're listening only on audio, all you hear is boom, 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 boom. You don't know what's coming.
Right.
The other one at least says...
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
The Google change log.
It's a little Shrek-y.
I like cheese.
I particularly like this.
People who are listening can't see, but
there's a change log,
and one says that there's a bug found in Leo's salad, which is usually
that's why I'm having soup today. I think from the audio audience, probably the trumpets is probably the better choice because it at least says Google change log,
and our audience is mostly audio.
Yeah, right? Believe it or not, still. Yeah. It's changing, you know. It's very interesting to watch. It's like moving it's like a locomotive slowly taking off from the station, watching the video start to climb.
Cross, yeah. That's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, and on some of the shows they have iPad today is mostly video. I think I can't remember, but the good news is that at least it's going that up, not
going the right direction.
Yeah, but we do have to. I have to constantly remember, and it's not an easy thing because I'm seeing it that there's people who most of our audience who's just hearing it. So I got to.
And God bless you, everyone.
God bless everyone. Yeah.
In your cars.
Just to answer Jeff's question earlier about whether or not you know, the message from Google is if you've ever been caught up in link spam, you'll see a message in Webmaster Tools about unnatural links pointing to your site. We send you this message when we see evidence of paid links, link exchanges, or other link schemes that violate our quality guidelines. So you do get a notification in Webmaster Tools about the sites that are linking to you that are considered spam.
Did you know that Google guards its top secret data center with stormtroopers? There's a little... Now, we could talk about this because Google has kind of thrown open the doors. They're beautiful pictures. But there's also a street view now of...
Whenever you use a Google product, you're connecting to one of our data centers.
This is the Lenoir, North Carolina data center.
Let's take a look inside and see how they work.
It's a video, but you could do this by hand. I don't know.
Oh,
if you
I didn't
see
sign the NDA.
It's not that secret,
Google
apparently.
Employees work here, keeping the data center up and running 24 hours a day.
In the Wired article, it's great. They talk about the first Google data center, which was in San Jose at an Exodus, was the colo.
Allow our data centers to communicate.
And what a mess it was.
On the server floor,
this is not a mess.
Computers handle everything from billions of servers.
This is a model of engineering.
It is the water pipes. Viruses.
Yeah, I love that. The color and the cooling system. The water pipes are Google colored.
I don't know if it's in the video or not, but it's on the site. I put the link up for the site as well.
Really anal geeks plus lots of money equals beautiful, beautiful data center.
But you want a data, you know, cooling is everything. In fact, they talk about the vast amount of power used by data centers. It was something like 1.5% of all the electrical power in the U.S. is used by data centers.
All of its content.
Look at the stack of hard drives.
For extra security, they destroy it.
They're destroying the hard drive with a giant drill press.
The machines in our data centers are always...
Because they don't want anybody to know what you've been looking for.
Cooling towers like these pipe in water to cool them down and keep them running. When the water heats up, we pump it back outside.
This town, before it became known as the data center capital of the U.S., was a...
explore a Google data center with...
Famous for furniture making. All that North Carolina furniture came from there.
So those big spaces.
Yeah. So Urs Holzer, who is the engineer who designed these data centers, had never before designed a data center. He was on leave as a computer science professor at UC Santa Barbara in 1999. There you go. Look at the wires. This is the slideshow on the Google site. There's all the hard drives. When his new employers, I'm reading from the Stephen Levy article in Wired, when his new employers took him to the Exodus server facility in Santa Clara, Exodus was a co-location site, or colo, where multiple companies rent floor space. Look at that. There's the colorful cooling pipes. Google colored. You know what? The first thing I think of is I saw somebody had to paint all those pipes different colors.
I mean, it looks like a jungle gym. It looks like a playground. Especially
it does.
With that bike there.
Yeah. Google's cage sat next to servers from eBay and other blue chip internet companies, but the search company's array was the most densely packed and chaotic. Brin and Page were looking to upgrade the system, which often took a full 3.5 seconds to deliver search results, and tended to crash on Mondays. I think Matt Cutts mentioned that once. Huh. There was something that happened, and they never had figured it out. But Mondays, everything would crash.
Because of a spike in traffic, search traffic,
It was probably a memory leak of some kind, and
Mondays is when you never put up a new version on Friday. Maybe they were just pubbing up new versions on Mondays.
The spiders were extra busy. Exodus was a huge mess. Hertz later recalled. And the cramped hodgepodge would soon be strained even more. Really, they were ready to launch AdWords. I mean, just the growth. And I'm thinking about Facebook, too. The growth of these. We forget, you know, when you have 800 million or now a billion users hitting your servers, that's a lot of servers. Not just a lot of bandwidth. That's a lot of hardware.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling, really.
Was Google the first to get to such scale with just doing pizza boxes?
I think
the generic pizza
I think Google
model.
I remember vividly when Google published the first pictures of its the modular thing they were building in containers. Mm-hmm. And they didn't enclose the servers for cooling purposes. They didn't have them in, they were just kind of sitting open. I think it was Google that did that first.
Well, and their approach was to never spend a lot of money on high-end stuff. Their approach was always to design for failure and use a lot of cheap equipment, but have a ton of redundancy. So if one went out, it didn't matter.
Google made advances in this is actually a great article. If you're kind of a data geek, the article in Wired is great. Water cooling issues and this Google's notorious for getting the lowest possible energy usage. A perfectly efficient data center would get a score of 1. Experts considered a 2, meaning that half the power was wasted in heat and other stuff, would be a reasonable number. Google gets about 1.2, very close to perfect efficiency. It's kind of neat.
It's the first time we've ever been allowed to see.
Yeah.
Inside a data center.
They treat these like they're top secret. I'm not sure why, really.
I mean, I don't know why either.
Are they terrorist targets? What would you learn by seeing that?
Well, yeah, I know.
Doesn't show you how to get in. Of course, the numbers are mind-boggling when you realize that Felix Baumgartner jump on Sunday was viewed by 8 million people simultaneously on YouTube. Huge. Not only a new record for streaming video, but it broke the old record, just kind of like Baumgartner broke the old record by a factor of 16.
Yeah.
The previous record was 500,000 during the Olympics.
Now, let's not forget that there was some complaint that, one guess is that a lot of that was served or optimized through Akamai.
Right. Mm-hmm. It wasn't all Google.
Which is fine. I mean, it's only a smart way to offload to closer to
right. CDN. You
know, the table terms, the head ends of people, the nodes, and to get it distributed out there is just a better architecture.
I mean, Google Scale is part of their competitive advantage, right? I mean, that's how many other companies could do it? Could do that.
Is Amazon as good at scale? No, I guess it's different kind of scale.
I remember talking to an early Amazon engineer. Where was that? Oh, it was at a food camp. He was like employee 3. And he talks about the day they moved the Amazon servers. He threw it in the back of his car, drove across town. And he said, as I was driving, I'm thinking, I have all of Amazon in my trunk. Couldn't do that anymore.
Scales better in a different way, you know, for optimized for what they do.
Well, I mean, Amazon sells scale. You know, they sell Amazon and EC2. And I mean,
But they do that, right? Because the holiday time, you know, like they have all the scale that they have to be ready for, you know, the 1 month or 2 months a year when people are buying.
Oh, that's interesting. That makes sense.
And then the rest of the time, it's sort of.
That's how CompuServe got started.
Really?
H&R Block used a lot of computing power during tax time, and it was unused the rest of the year. So they said, well, we should do something with that. We got these mainframes. What do we do? And they started CompuServe, one of the first online services. Huh?
What happened in April, though, when they did need that power?
Or in Christmas to EC2. Well, exactly. I guess at some point it becomes a business and you don't I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was a whole idea of the early days of computing, of time sharing, right? That no one user would need a mainframe.
Right. Well, it's true. Back in the old days.
Now I got a mainframe in my phone, and that's not enough sometimes.
When I ran sites for my last employer for Advance, we had them in this horrid, haunted building in Journal Square, Jersey City, which a recent employee called Urinal Square, appropriately. And they were in a horrid, dank basement, an old press room that nearly flooded all the time. And one tech director I hired who didn't last very long, we had a heat problem, so he went off turning off all the heads of the servers. And then he decided to turn off a couple servers, so he turned off whole services. This was my tech director. it was a bad day. Awful day.
So what would be cooler than Google's North Carolina data center? Their Finnish data center.
Ooh. Infrastructure that's already there, the climate in that area, and then design something.
They're using seawater
to really make the most efficient cooling. And
so we can now blame Google for global warming on the sea.
Yeah, exactly.
Boiling the ocean.
You can blame for everything else. Why not that?
It's their fault. Blame Google. Let's take a break. We got some actually hard news. I thought that'd be kind of fun to do some pretty pictures and so forth. But first, let's talk about, speaking of pretty pictures, how about some music? How about Ford Sync? Ford.com/technology. If they have an app, which I really love. It's a free app on the iOS. I think they have it for Android, too, where you can try Ford Touch, the My Ford Touch, on your phone just to see the UI and play with it. And that's one way to take a look at what Ford Sync can do. Sync lets you control your media player with voice commands, and it's so sweet. In fact, I was curious. I connected my iPhone 5 up. I finally got an extra lightning cable, and I connect my iPhone 5 up. All Ford Sync vehicles have at least one, sometimes two USB ports, plugged in the USB port, plugged in the lightning cable into the USB port. The iPhone 5, just like the iPhone 4, I can control it. I can browse it. I can use on the screen on my, and I can call for anything by voice, which is amazing. You can browse your music collection by genre. And this is just not iPhone. I mean, almost any phone, Android, iOS. You can browse your collection by genre, artist, album, song title. You can ask for a playlist. I want to hear the rock and roll, album rock, all with voice commands. It allows voice-activated control of your media player. It'll even play a list of music you're in the mood for. If you like the song you're listening to, you say, play music similar to this, and it will. It's very smart. You can voice control music no matter how it's stored on your smartphone, via Bluetooth streaming on a USB drive. If you have an MP3 player like an iPod, an iPad, iPad's a great example. You can use Bluetooth or connect the USB cable. And here's a nice feature. If you have available sync with MyFord Touch and HD radio technology, you can use iTunes tagging. You like a song, you're listening on the HD radio, you like a song, you say, tag that. And when you get back home, iTunes will let you buy it. Best of all, Ford offers sync on every 2012, 2013 Ford vehicle sold in the USA, including the 2012 Ford Focus. Now that is awesome. That is really awesome. I've been asking people to tweet. We've been getting a lot of people tweeting. Somebody sent me an email yesterday saying, hey, who do I tell if I bought a Ford because I heard about it? I heard about sync. And I said, well, you could tell me or you can tweet it. And I've been seeing lots of tweets from people who said, yes, I just got my new Edge. I love my Ford Escape. I just got sync. It's really cool. Tweet it. Let us know. You can also add at Ford, and that way they'll know that you listen to the Twit Network. And if you want to know more, Ford.com/technology. If you want to see it all in action, or I got a better idea, go to your Ford dealer and say, I want to test drive, not the car, the Ford Sync. They'll put you in a car, but bring your smartphone so you can test drive the Sync as well. Go further in a Ford, Ford.com/technology. So, I don't know. You're going to have to explain this to me. Turns out, reading somebody's Gmail doesn't violate a federal statute. South Carolina Supreme Court last week decided accessing someone's email without their permission is not a violation of the 1986 Stored Communications Act because the email is in a cloud, which counts as electronic storage and is not, specifically not, protected by the act.
Isn't that amazing?
The Stored Communications Act apparently requires it to be on a hard drive.
This is the problem with making laws technology specific, right? It's just absurd. But the same goes in the other way. The fact that our email is not as protected as our physical mail is another substantiation of how wrong this is.
So this came up in a case. It looks like it was a divorce case where a woman basically hacked it or guessed her husband's security questions, like suspected him of cheating, guessed his Gmail or Yahoo Mail security questions, got into his Yahoo Mail account, found messages between him and his lover, and gave them to her divorce lawyer to use them as evidence. And then he sued her back, saying that violated several laws, including the Stored Communications Act. So this is pretty interesting.
I think this is an idiot Supreme Court. Frankly, yeah. here's
yeah,
what
I mean. This is 1986, right? This act was written.
Yeah, but
in
let me read you, and you tell me. The code defines electronic storage under the SCA as any temporary intermediate storage of a wire or electronic communication incidental to the electronic transmission thereof, and B, any storage of such communication by an electronic communication service for the purposes of backup protection of such communications. The judges found that because he had no other copies of his email, they could not possibly have been a backup. These guys are morons. Yeah. Can I just say it? We declined to hold, the two judges wrote, Justices Hearn and Kittredge, that retaining an opened email constitutes storing it for backup protection under the act. I think this is not a new law we need. We need new judges.
Yeah.
This guy never used mail in his life.
Obvious. Right.
So
what's the hard? Well, you know, it would be the same as saying that it was written at a time where it was never put on a floppy disk.
Right. Like back in the day, you would download your email from your server and it would be deleted to from your server and it would now exist on your computer. And that would mean that you had retrieved your email and now it was on your hard drive. But that's not the way that it works right now.
In the day of the trash 80, it was on a cassette drive.
It's on a hard drive somewhere. The intent of the law is it's stored somewhere.
But storage. It could be virtual. I mean, a solid state drive.
Okay, a solid state drive. It could be memory. It's electronic storage.
That's the absurdity. Yes.
Morons.
This is the problem. Do not write laws to technology.
Let me just say, there's going to be an election in 3 weeks. If you do not vote, you do not deserve to be a geek.
Hear, hear.
Seriously.
Put that on a bumper sticker and stick it on your Volvo.
So if this guy had had downloaded a copy of this email to one of his devices, so if he connected to Yahoo Mail through a client on any one of his devices, he would have a copy, a personal copy, and then this could be considered a backup because it was a different copy.
Right.
Oh, man. Wow.
Not too far off, but Pirate Bay just announced.
They're in the cloud.
The cloud, which is hilarious because what it sees is the inability to go seize a server.
Right.
Guess where the server is? Where's Waldo? Right.
Obviously, as we just learned moments ago, the servers are somewhere.
Yes.
Right. The servers are somewhere.
Just follow the yellow brick pipe.
But it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant where they
so
are.
So I'm just pointing out, you're going to get to vote for your member of Congress. You might get to vote for a senator. You're certainly going to get to vote for a president. All of those people have some influence on these courts. These justices are appointed by the president. And they are approved by Congress. So get out there and vote and ask your candidates, hey, what do you know about electronic storage?
Define backup.
What is the cloud, Congressman? What? Cloud? I wish last night in the debate, somebody stood up and said, Mr. Obama, Mr. Romney, please define the cloud. We need somebody to do that in one of these debates just so that we know which one gets it.
Oh, right. It's true. Would love that.
Probably neither, but...
Well, Romney will say, I think I bought it.
Romney's going to say, I'm a businessman. I know what computers are.
Right.
That's his answer.
Binders full of clouds.
And President Obama will say, you know, I feel your pain. Oh, I give up.
I know how tough it is.
Let me just tell you.
Well, he always starts with the
empathy. Romney will say, I keep things in binders.
Binders of women.
Binders of clouds. Binders of hard drives.
Of clouds. That's
my
That's it. I keep... Who needs a cloud? I've got binders. Oh, dear.
Internet moment. It was a matter of minutes before Women in Binders was a Tumblr feed.
It took no time.
Oh, my God. So great.
So what did Romney say? This was in the question about the equal pay for equal work.
He didn't have enough women. He went and demanded someone bring him binders filled with women.
Right. He went to women's group. He looked at his applicant pool for his administration, and it was mostly men. And he said, "We need to have more qualified women applicants." And he went to a group, and they apparently handed him binders full of women's names who were qualified.
So literally, before the debate was over, bindersfullofwomen.tumblr.com not only was started, but was full of examples of binders of women. It is the funniest. It's every internet meme. Here's one Romney to bring them all, and then the darkness binder them. Here's a cat with binders of cats. this is what the internet's good at. Alas, this doesn't help us much in cases like Supreme Court in South Carolina, which apparently doesn't understand how storage works.
So, you know, if you go back to Ted Stevens, does the mockery of him and tubes...
I hope it makes a difference.
I think it made a difference at some point. Somebody, other politicians at some point said, I can't be made fun of in quite that way. What the F was this about? What is this tubes thing?
Right. This was a state Supreme Court, not the national.
It was a federal law, I think, right?
No. Yeah, but they were ruling on the federal law. But of course, it was a state case. It could be appealed. And not that I have any hope at all if it were appealed at the U.S. Supreme Court would have any clue what was going on either. But technology is moving too fast. I mean, the whole point of government in the U.S. anyway, is designed to be very, very, very slow because the founders believed that a slow government was and kind of unempowered government was safer. If this were a dictatorship.
Well, there's an easy way around this. You write laws to principles, right? You that a law that's communication defined thusly as private communication is physical mail or email or whatever, and it has principles around it. So it was just a badly written law, badly interpreted by bad judges.
Yes, exactly. It was too specific. They didn't need, and maybe in 1986, they needed to explain what storage was. I don't know. But I think you're exactly right. Write to the principle, and then the justice can look at modern technology and see what the intent was, as opposed to saying, it's Talmudic.
Right?
Yep.
Google is creating now. They got Nexus phones. They got Nexus tablets. How about a Nexus call center?
This is interesting. You think Google's going to get into the business of customer service?
So this is a job listing for help desk level one for a confidential client who recently unveiled a new Android tablet. I think we all know who that is. It says in the listing, the location is Mountain View. $19 an hour. That's pretty good. Full-time, six-month contract, option for extension and or permanency mid-September. Phone and email support.
That's pretty expensive real estate.
Mountain View?
Yeah.
That's where Google is. Oh, why they put them in Mountain View. I see what you're saying.
They're around the world.
There's probably three people. That's the problem. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Well, I think we mentioned on the show last week, I think you mentioned the famous story that Larry Page said when someone came to him and said we should answer this user's email, and he said no.
Right, don't get started.
Scale. But now that you start getting money from people, you have to have customer service. You have two costs come. This is the thing, the fight I have with paywalls in newspapers. People say, oh, put up paywalls, it'll solve all our problems. No, two costs come when you put up paywalls. One is marketing and the other one is customer service. And it's not cheap to get money out of people.
Did I tell you about my Comcast story?
No.
I tweeted I'm still having. It's not even like Comcast is mean. It's just that the whole system's broken. And I was just complaining. I was venting on Twitter. But they watch Twitter like a hawk. Like, if you want customer service, complain on Twitter. Don't call a customer. You can't even get a human. But if you tweet it. So I've been getting calls, and actually I've started ignoring them because the last one was Sunday morning at 8 a.m. I was asleep from the Comcast executive bureau. They have the executive offices of Comcast. And I think it is because it's someone with a Philly accent. But it didn't seem so much like, so what you would expect is, oh, we're so sorry. What can we do to make this right? We value you as a customer. What are your complaints? It was like, hey, she literally said, you're paying $39 a month. You should be happy. Jeez. I think they now want you, they're now calling you to get you to shut up. Not to fix it, because they can't. It's so broken, they can't.
Well, Leo, I bet they see your cloud score and your follower count.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure she knew my cloud score.
You're an influential person.
Yeah, what she didn't know is that what HDMI was, but she did know my cloud score.
I think this is the problem of Comcast was actually one of the first companies to really respond. Comcast Cares.
Frank Eliason.
Frank Eliason, who did a great job. He's now left to go to a Citibank. Well, a slightly worse world. But Frank's a very nice guy. He's written a book about all this.
And when he did it really was. And I had some experience of this. So sorry. We're going to fix it. We're going to make it right. But
he was a senior vice president of the company who would deal directly with customers.
Right.
And now when the bureaucracy opens, there's some kind of, Leo's Law created that the larger that bureaucracy gets, the meaner and more intransigent and nastier it's going to get. If you are a cable company, you must act like a cable company at the end of the day.
Well, I don't even know if they want to be mean. I think what they want, they just want me to stop tweeting. But by the way, I immediately tweeted that. That's what's changed. That's a little shift. Instead of saying, how can we make this right? We're sorry. We want to give you good customer service. I think they realize we can't. It's like Google. We can't. So let's just get them to shut up. And so she was saying things like, I said, well, I ordered two HDMI boxes. The guy came with one component box, no HDMI. She said, oh, well, no, we don't do HDMI boxes. I said, what are you talking about? I've had HDMI from you guys for years. What are you talking about? I think it was really to get them get me to shut up. But I think that's probably what's going to happen. What's going on now is it doesn't scale. What are you going to watch Twitter and everybody who claims? Look at Comcast on Twitter. It's all complaints nonstop. They can't fix that.
They could fix it by
reinventing the business.
I mean, the best way to get you to stop tweeting is to help you out to fix the problem.
Just got me to tweet more.
They got you to tweet more, exactly.
And you know what? Now I'm going to get more calls from that 800 number in Philadelphia, which I now have blocked on my phone. because I don't want to talk to them. They're not going. It's not going to get better. It's just
right. Leo, that is the worst thing when an airline or a phone or a cable company says, "Let me explain."
Yes.
No.
No.
I don't want you to explain how you're screwing me.
Don't justify. Don't rationalize. I don't need that.
But this idea that Google is setting up a call center, I mean, one of the things that Google's really stunk at for the reasons we talked about last week is customer service. I mean, it's really hard to get a hold of someone. I mean, just exactly. In the 2 years we've been doing this show, I've gotten a handful of emails personally from people who have had their AdSense account shut down or they're locked out of their Gmail and they've posted in the forums and they've looked at the .py help files and there's nothing they can do. They can't get a hold of anyone at Google and they, you know, and I'm sure this has happened to you guys, they come to me sort of begging like, do you know somebody there? Is there any way that I can get my stuff? And it's a little frightening to think, you know, if you don't have a big platform like we have, the privilege of a big platform, that you're using a free service, and if something goes wrong, that you don't have any recourse, and there's no customer support that's reliable that you know that someone will get back to you. So I often wondered if Google could literally charge for support. You know, it's like, here's our free app, but, you know, if you call us, you know, it's going to cost you $10 and you can, you know, get a human. I mean, in this case, of course, they're selling Nexus devices, so they're providing customer support for this device that they're selling. But what's the support, you know, what's the support solution for free web apps that are advertising support?
It has to be hard, though, if you have no tradition of customer support, no tradition of communication with customers, to turn on a dime and say, okay, now we're going to support hardware.
Yeah, and support, it's tough.
Yeah, it's a horrible, tough. I mean, it's a horrible job.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Because I know that
it's costly
and people are
exhausting.
Mean.
People are mean and yeah.
they say mean things to you on the phone. But speaking of speaking, Larry Page speaks. Remember, he lost his voice in the summer.
Still don't know why.
But he was at Zeitgeist in Paradise Valley, Arizona. That sounds like that was an event, by the way. Did you
and
see?
By the way, I'm going to say it again. What do I have to do? Write a kiss-ass book, be on a show all about Google. What do we all have to do to get invited to Zeitgeist? Huh?
I mean, Scoble got invited.
Swag.
Scoble got invited. Why didn't you get invited?
I know.
Jarvis should be there. He wrote the Google book. Hey, I wrote a Google book. Well, I should be there.
Hey, yeah. We all do a show on Google. But I don't want to go, so that's okay. You can invite
them. Do a show from there, Leo?
Invite them. I'll do a show from there, sure, whatever. Actually, Trey Ratcliffe, did you see the pictures? Maybe that was just on Path. No, I think he published
them. He went
there. He spoke and did an amazing Zeitgeist talk with gigabits of pictures around him. Let me see if I can find the...
I just thought he was going to do that. I didn't see there were any pictures afterwards.
Well, see, that. Oh, I just never know if this is Path only, or maybe where did I see it, or was it on... No, here, inside the Google Veniceplex.
Surely it's on Plus, no?
Yeah, there you go. Plus.google. Let's search for Trey Ratcliffe. He gave a talk. I'm pretty sure it was there. At the Zeitgeist. What is Zeitgeist?
It's for their business partners, and they come in and wow them.
Okay.
So it's their little private teddy thing.
But isn't it also the name of their, like, search trends, their yearly trends report? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But so this is Google with giving the zeitgeist of the world to these powerful machers. So they had Sean Penn there, Hal Varian.
Sean Penn?
Yeah, Sean Penn. God knows why.
Okay. He had a 16,000-pixel screen. It is in fact, on his Plus page. In fact, you can watch the entire video.
That's the Nexus 16,000, in other words.
This is a picture from Scoble of all... So as Trey is talking about his photography, all his images are showing up on these screens all the way around the Zeitgeist. Isn't that awesome?
And with the brilliance of the photos in his HD photography, that must be really
must have been gorgeous.
Mm. Hey, Scoble's there?
Yeah,
Scoble's there.
But he's probably there because of Rackspace. Well, I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. Anyway, those talks, I guess a number of those Zeitgeist talks are online at zeitgeistminds.com. And there's Trey, the wonderful Trey Ratcliffe, giving his talk. Wow. I guess the pictures are moving behind him as he's talking. Wow.
Cool.
Yeah. No, you're not a customer. You don't. That's a sale. It's a sales event, in other words.
They have interesting people.
Larry Page spoke in a raspy voice, spent more than half an hour talking about things like
Google. Him up, I think, in there. We can listen to his voice for a
minute. Hey, he said, I want to tell you about Google. It is, I'm in the olive oil business. we are not going.
Sorry. Stop me now. He spent more than half an hour talking about antitrust, the flap over maps, the map flap. By the way, trademark, Leo Laporte, 2012. The Apple map flap. I think, how do we miss that headline?
Combining those two topics, by the way, I went in and I searched yesterday for an address in Dumbo in New York on just plain old Google.
Yeah.
And the first listing was MapQuest.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I just did another one before the show to see what happened. It was the second listing. But MapQuest is right up there. And you know, you wonder if that's not getting ready for the old antitrust call, which they're getting not only from the FTC now, but of course always from the EU.
That's really, because truthfully, the right result would be the Google map. I mean,
of course
that's what you wanted. Yeah. You didn't want MapQuest.
And again, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. But you're right. There, people will look at that and say, well, Google's giving their own services priority. And that's why I've always thought Google, search should be somehow separated out from their other businesses. I don't know how you do that, but.
I was talking to Jeff about this in the pre-show, but if anyone watches The Good Wife, it airs on Sunday. It's a really good show, but it's a, you know, it's a legal drama. It's all fiction. But this week's past episode, which was called Two Girls, One Code, which I will not comment on. But they
wow, covered- that's a little nudge, wink, wink to the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. It was actually about a startup founded by these two women who was demoted in search results, and they were suing the search engine. And so they covered sort of search algorithms as protected speech versus, you know, trade secrets. And it's actually a pretty tech savvy show. Sometimes I can't tell if the show was making fun of techies. Of course, they had the like requisite chubby, like white guy blogger, you know, who wrote a review with, you know, without checking any facts of the software, you know, so they kind of poke fun at the tech community, but it's also pretty, I thought it was a fairly smart rendition for a Sunday night CBS primetime show.
People are more knowledgeable about technology. That's why these judicial rulings bug me, because normal people understand that when you have mail in the cloud, it's stored on a hard drive. They're not idiots.
Right.
People understand technology much more than they ever did before. So interestingly, Larry Page talked about that very thing. Mr. Page also, this is from an article in the Wall Street Journal. I could not find a video of his talk or I would run it. Mr. Page also,
30% year, 10% better, heavier batteries to work with. And, you know, car engines don't get better.
I tried to get out of Google, but they keep pulling me in.
Chad, thanks for showing me up. I said I couldn't find.
I'm sorry.
So like- now we hear his voice. It's a little rap, but, you know, it's fine. He said, and maybe you can find, maybe Mr. Smarty Pants, you can find this portion of the talk. Mr. Page also made several comments that reflected the arguments Google has used to counter claims by competitors that it has increasingly pointed web search engine users to Google's own services, Google Places or Google Plus, rather than sites run by competitors like business listings at Yelp. Page noted that when Google Maps was introduced and automatically began to show up as the top search result, if people searched for information about places, quote, we had the same kind of criticism, he said. People said, there's MapQuest. No one uses them anymore. Now I'm sounding like Christopher Walken as the guy.
Yeah.
he said exactly what we just said. Nobody uses them anymore. And yet now they are showing up as results, huh? He said, when people search for Sony digital camera, they're not looking for links to other search engines that compete with Google. Amen. I think you want product information. You want to buy something. So I do think they have a good argument. Whether they want to make that argument in court or in front of the Department of Justice is maybe another matter. He did not say whether Google would introduce a Google Maps app for the iPhone and iPad, as everybody asks him, Schmidt, everybody. We obviously... He said, we obviously love to serve users on different platforms with maps. And we're excited that other people are starting to notice. We've worked hard on maps for 7 years. That's good. So Sean Penn, you're right. Ken Chenault of American Express was there. Just sounds like a good event. I'd love to go.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we've lost our in at Google. Karen Wickery is now at Twitter. But she's in at Twitter, which is good.
Yeah, that's a good in.
That's a good in.
There were some leaked screenshots of the new Google Maps app for iOS.
Shall I show them?
Yeah, let's look at them.
This is from BenGild.com.
They're pretty blurry.
He's a coder and a mobile designer. They're really blurry.
They're really blurry. Yeah,
but you can see really that's blurry. An iPhone, right? You recognize that in the upper.
Yeah, that's clearly an iPhone.
There's LTE. And then he says, get excited. That's all he says.
So, well, not surprising that they're working on a standalone app. And it will be optimized for the iPhone 5. And hopefully Apple won't not approve it.
Wouldn't that be funny? There's no way they're not approving that.
Yeah, after the last flap when they didn't approve. Yeah. Which Google app was it? Yeah,
it was Google Voice. They got a letter from a senator.
Right.
You don't want to mess with them. DuckDuckGo. How's your DuckDuckGo experiment going?
Good. I'm still using it. I don't really think about it. I changed my search shortcut and I still use it. There are times when I have to switch over to Google if it doesn't find something. And I obviously use Google for news and images and maps. But yeah, I'm still using DuckDuckGo. I got a thing for the underdog.
I do too.
And I actually think it's just interesting to see what another search engine can do.
Well, they're talking about the filter bubble. They did a study with some 131 volunteers and asked them to search for three terms: abortion, gun control, and Obama, and then compare the results. They made a video out of it talking about Eli Pariser's
pretty good.
filter bubble. Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, that's an interesting way to compete, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. They're saying, hey, you know what? Google's not giving everybody the same results. You're only seeing the stuff that you want to see,
right?
Not the stuff that you're actually looking for. I know that Jeff doesn't love this. Jeff doesn't like the filter bubble. I knew you'd have something to say.
Even when in the same country... And when signed out of Google,
you get different results.
When you use Google applications, they collect your personal information.
Oh, come on. All right. It's a bad Google collecting your personal information.
Yeah, it's called relevance. I drive down the interstate and I see the same billboard everybody else sees. That's not good. I don't want that. I don't want the same three channels that everybody else has on TV. I love the idea that we now get things that are tailored to us and our needs. I'm not part of a mass. I don't think it's a wonderful part of America to be treated as a mass. It's not the natural state of being. It's a temporary state of being that only existed from 1955 on, till about 1996. It lasted for 40 years during the age of television and mass media. So I argue with the idea that getting the same thing everybody else gets is a good thing.
In the old days, the Fuller Brush salesman would come to your home, say, is the lady of the house at home, and talk about your needs.
That's right.
Give you a brush to...
And in the general store over that good Cracker Barrel, they knew that you, Mr. Laporte, liked your salad without bugs.
Hey, they're tracking me again.
Go ahead, Gina.
Commies.
Uphold the virtue.
I think it's important to question this, especially in this political season. I mean, it was really interesting to me to see the people that I follow, and I like to think of myself as someone who makes an effort to follow people with different views, to see, you know, all of my people sort of say the things that I thought about the debates this week. And so if the guy in San Francisco searches for Obama and gets, you know, the LA Times as a result, a top result, and the guy in Texas searches for Obama and gets Fox News as the top result, that doesn't feel good to me. I don't love that idea.
Because it's habit, Gina, right? It's the way what we were used to and what mass media, my colleagues, said was the right and proper way to do it.
Right, everyone should get this one thing.
Right. So I think what you have to do is break out of that. And then you're right. Then it can be good or bad. Absolutely. And then you can, but I think that just because it's the way we used to do it doesn't make it right. I was at a really interesting meeting this morning at Digital First Media with Jay Rosen, who two of us are with Emily Beller on Board of Advisors.
Oh, what a team. I like you three.
Fun, yeah.
We still want to do a media show with you and Emily and Jay
too. Wonderful. So anyway, so, you know, the journalists ask about the old objectivity thing, right? And Jay said that, and in the way only Jay can, that he has thousands of people on Twitter who are conservatives who don't like what he say, but they follow him. And I said, right. It made me think about it. I thought, right. If everybody was in an echo chamber, then no one would ever argue with me. And plenty do. Right. So people do seek out other opinions and seek out other views. And, you know, I think that there's a new app I was going to mention later, but I'll mention it now, called Circa, that just started. Some Ben Hu of Cheeseburger, David Cohn, who's a really, really bright young news guy, and some other members of the team started this one. And it's the beginning of it right now. It's CIR.ca. But it will start to get you through assets and paths of news. So just this level alone, Gina, if you come into a story and you read it every day, the fifth day you come into the story, it's not going to give you the same background paragraphs because it knows you already know it. Mm-hmm. So it's going to give you a more expert view. So if you look at it that way, right, is that a filter bubble problem? No, it obviously reduces a redundancy in my life. No, it's different. Oh, yes, it is. That's it. Right. So it reduces a redundancy and an irrelevance in my life. Right. And this has been put in just political terms of, oh, you're only going to see liberal things, Jeff, because you're a liberal. You know, and Eli, in his argument, and I think he made it on the show, was that he blamed Facebook for not showing him conservatives. But of course, the reason they didn't show him conservatives is because he never looked at the conservatives in his list. So it was his fault. He's the one who showed his way.
Yeah. Should Facebook or Twitter or Google force you to see stuff you don't want to see because it's good for you?
Or right, that's the old editor's view of the world. I'm sorry, Gina. You raise a simple objection, and now I'm.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. I hear what you're saying. I had people tell me that they, you know, unfollowed me on Twitter because they didn't agree with my political views, which I just think is dumb. I mean, I think it's important to listen to other people's. I have relatives on Facebook who I couldn't disagree with more, and it's very tense around this time of year. But it's important to hear the other point of view. And I agree that, you know, an app like Circa, and I actually haven't tried it out yet, but I like the idea that it would know, I already know this, so I'm going to show you, information that you haven't read already. That makes sense. I don't think that collecting personalizing search results is a bad idea, but I don't love the idea that people who don't understand how it works. That example in the DuckDuckGo video of, you know, the Fox News versus the LA Times, depending on, you know, where you're located and what other things you've looked at. It's still, there's something about that I don't like.
Right. Stay right there for a second. Right. So is that a problem of principle about personalized search results, or is it a problem of execution about how it's done?
Yeah. Right? I mean, yeah,
I think is that it's the responsibility of Google to give you everything at once. I would disagree with that, but I think that I would say it a little bit differently and say that I would value a search engine that would expose me to, would be the opposite of what we're talking about, that would expose me to some of the things that I'm not otherwise exposed to, not the mass of what everybody has. That's not valuable to me.
Right.
If it recognizes that, okay, Jarvis, you've seen this again and again and again and again, you've never looked at this story from the Telegraph's view in London, and so we're going to pop that in for you so that we expose you to that and choose to, so it's the opposite of giving you what you expect, give you sometimes what you don't expect. I could go for that. But that's not DuckDuckGo. That's not the idea of what Eli says, is we all have to have the same thing. I don't want that.
Right. Leo, you're with Jarvis on this.
I'm not. But, you know, I also agree with you in the sense that I just don't think that it's Google's job to feed us our vegetables.
Yeah.
So
the issue of execution, you don't feel like it's their job to say, you know, we're going to throw in a couple of conservative.
They should give you what you want. Any more than you should go to Denny's, order the Grand Slam breakfast, and they put a piece of broccoli on the plate. That's not what you ordered.
Right. So
might be better for you.
A Go-Go Duck would do the opposite. It would be personalized. It would listen to what you do, but it would choose instead to throw you sources you were not asking for. That would be the opposite way to execute on DuckDuckGo.
But it's an interesting problem. Maybe you could fuzz it, Gina. You could do some fuzzy logic. Or no, I know. Maybe you do a box on the right that says, by the way, You want the opposing viewpoint? Look at this.
Right, the opposing. Well, you guys had Clay Johnson, who wrote The Information Diet on triangulation, and he talked about it when he worked on the Dean campaign, the Howard Dean campaign. They were just convinced that he was going to win. It was so clear and obvious to them
that
he was
going to win
because they were all surrounded by all, you know, people. And I see that kind of, you know, I think all the people who are voting, you know, who are on the team.
I live in Northern California. I can't understand how Obama could possibly even not be, it couldn't be close.
Exactly.
And I'm sure if I lived somewhere else, that would be pretty obvious.
It'd be pretty obvious. Yeah. So that's the kind of thing that concerns me, is not having a realistic view, a broader perspective view on what's actually going on.
I agree with you. I just, whose responsibility is that?
On principle, but disagree, I think, on the execution. I don't think the DuckDuckGo is the solution. It's like the argument about serendipity. There's two arguments about serendipity that I hear. One is that editors give it to you because they're in control of that. They know what you don't know and they'll give it to you. I think that's wrong. The other one was that serendipity is randomness. And as I said on the show before, I think serendipity is unexpected relevance. So somebody with similar interest to you found something interesting to them that you may not have found, and they find it for you. Right? Well, that's an exposure to something, and the system of humanity works okay with that. Twitter works pretty well. It gives us serendipity. Mm-hmm. I don't want irrelevance. I don't want randomness. I don't want editors controlling what we all see and call it serendipity. I want some soupçon of knowledge about me and what I know and don't know. And I think that we can far, far better execute on that problem. And then we would agree about the principle and maybe we could find a new ground of execution.
That's probably why of the two choices I proposed, which is a box of opposing viewpoints or just some random fuzzing, random fuzzing is better, because the truth is it's an illusion that this opposing viewpoints is really giving you the other. It's not a coin.
Right.
There's a huge spectrum of viewpoints.
Here's the danger. It's the danger we see in media.
It is curated, even if it pretends not to be.
If you look up global warming in media, you see too many stories that say, well, but the other side say, when it's 99.99% of scientists to 0.1% of crackpots. And by putting them both in the same story with the same length, it gives you a false equivalency. There's a danger in that, too.
That's true.
Well, and let's say, you know, you searched for Obama and you got a box that said, what about Romney? But what about the Libertarian candidate? What about Roseanne Barr, who happens to be running in the state of California on the Peace and Freedom Party? What? I don't know if you've got Roseanne Barr on your ballot, but I was shocked. Shocked.
A Roseanne imitation, Leo?
I can't. I'm grabbing my crotch right now, but you can't see it.
Oh. What?
Gina has it on her ballot. I don't know if you do, Jeff. Look on your ballot.
No, I don't.
Roseanne Barr is running for president.
Wow. She didn't like me back in the day.
That's a good bumper sticker. Roseanne Barr is on my ballot. I don't know what it means. But that's the point, is that you can't... It's anything's... the notion of objectivity is artificial.
Absolutely.
So serendipity is the right word.
Right. So Google is trying to give you relevance. It's different than serendipity, right? That's what their goal is.
That's all they need to do. That's their job.
But that's what they say they want. That's what you're getting there. So yes, DuckDuckGo is an alternative. I would want for someone to play with something else that would, you know, push Google and show different kinds of quality in a different way.
It's great.
There's definitely a lot of room, I think, here for improvement, and I think this is a fascinating, really, discussion of who decides. You know, who decides how you eat your vegetables. Yeah.
Well, it's not editors, right? Editors believe that they serve you broccoli. That's their job. They're the broccoli chefs. And they believe, and I just heard this with a couple of editors just the other day, we tell you what's important. No, not so much. I did a panel Monday night at Museum of Modern Art. How is this for classy?
Swanky.
Yeah, it really is. I was out of my league. Paola Antonelli, who is one of the curators there, the head of R&D, had a panel about curation. And I've over-talked about curation in journalism. It's overused now. But she wanted, and I wanted to do a panel with her a couple of years ago. And I never got around to it. And by God, she did it. And she had the head curator of paintings and sculpture at MoMA with Maria Popova, a blogger who curates the web, with Tor, what's his name? He's a big hip-hop music producer, and me, the poseur in the group, right? And so the discussions you get to with things like that is, well, if you have a curator, What is that curator doing? Is that curator giving you authority? Is that curator a gatekeeper? Is that curator opening things up or closing things down for you? Right. And that's the problem with editors, thought that they could control your view of the world. I celebrate that being gone. Now getting, you know, just something just for you is too far the other way. There's some kind of middle ground. And I think Google would argue they could do it algorithmically to some rule. DuckDuckGo says they get it right by getting rid of the algorithms, right?
Right. I mean, but this is, I completely agree with throwing out the curator or the editor, but kind of the promise of the web and of PageRank and of search results is that you're going to get the results which reflect what people are writing about and saying online. So the mass, true, you know, the aggregate becomes the editor.
True.
And that idea I really like, right? Because no one is deciding for everybody, but everybody is deciding for everybody.
That has a filter bubble too. Then the conventional wisdom becomes the truth. Yeah.
Well, isn't that's true.
Wasn't that what the web could do for a while? And Google constantly tries to get to say, okay, that was fun, but we want to give you what's relevant to you. We want to know where you are, so we give you relevant results. Circa says we want to know what you've already seen, so we give you relevant results. Right. It's not the whole web picks it. And indeed, if the whole web, I mean, that's what Todd steals all the time, is he's changing it to get rid of the dross. So it's manipulating.
What Google's really trying to do, I think, right, is to figure out what you want and give you that.
To it, your intent.
And so
they're an advertising company.
Right.
I mean, right.
Well, it's also better search results. If I search for pizza, I don't want to find pizza in Brooklyn or San Diego. I want to find pizza in Petaluma. So right. What's wrong with it trying to intuit? You see, when we take politics out of it and we say something like pizza, then it makes sense.
Right. It makes a lot of sense. Absolutely. Right. So I think it makes a lot more sense in some areas than others. The politics, though, issue is... You know, is what
I just don't
really
think it's up to Google. I think it's if you say, well, Google's job is to intuit what I'm looking for, it is to do that in every realm. And it's not Google's job to say, oh, and by the way, you know, you really ought to consider something else. And how would you feel if you I think what we're saying as liberals is, well, we really ought to get those right wingers to see something besides Fox News. But how about with the other shoe on the other foot?
Right.
And every time you searched for, you know, Obama. Mm-hmm. You got Fox News. You wouldn't want that.
Right. Right.
So I think all you can ask Google to do is intuit what you want and give it to you. And yes, we should all eat our vegetables and we should read other sources. And I agree with Jeff that there's some parts of the web work that way anyway. I mean, you can't go on Twitter without seeing opposing viewpoints. I don't care how much you cultivate your feeds.
That's true.
I had such a great time watching the Twitter during the debate. Yeah. Man, was that scrolling by.
Just flying by.
It's like a chat room on a big day. It was
chat room on caffeine. Well, you're right. So Gina, if you Gina Trapani, come in and you search for Java, you're not a barista, so you don't want coffee.
It knows what you
want. Right.
About technology, so you don't want Java for dummies, right? Mm-hmm. You want people to know to give you good sources, however you define that, things that you're likely to click on. That's a pretty straightforward rule set.
Absolutely.
When it works well, it's great. Comcast with my Google Voice number, which has an area code in Baltimore, they gave me the Baltimore Comcast affiliate, and I couldn't get any help because they knew I was in Baltimore, even though I'm not. So when it works, it's good. When it doesn't work, it's not so good.
Right, but I mean, if I were to search for Romney's record on equal pay for women, I would probably get the page on BarackObama.com that explains, you know. So,
I'm so sorry. I couldn't resist. There's binders full of women.
You
know, I'm so thin in my maiden form binder.
I'm so sorry. I wasn't going to go there.
We don't have to get political.
Everybody knows I'm a loser and one of them lefty liberal from Northern California types. Google, however, and this will drive other people crazy. If you turn it on, you can search your Gmail across mail, contacts, Google Drive documents, and calendar appointments. You mean Google can see all that stuff? Of course they can, you nitwit.
This is the privacy policy consolidation, right?
Yeah,
this is
finally.
You said, hey, you know, there's one singular privacy policy and it applies to all the different products and they can be integrated. This is Google just wanted to be the one search box to all your personal stuff and the web.
And you do have to opt in. In fact, is this your tip, Gina? I'm sorry.
No, it's not my tip. I think it's an experiment. I think you have to.
You join the field trial, they say.
Or field trial. Yeah.
So it's google.com/experimental/gmail field trial.
27 nations sent a letter to Google demanding they change their privacy policy and separate, which would then not enable this functionality, which we want.
But
guess where they're from, I won't say it.
The EU did win the Peace Prize. I don't understand how that can happen, but okay. Yeah, they sent said 4 months to amend your privacy policy or face disciplinary action at a national level.
To the woodshed with you, Google.
Sometimes I just despair.
Yes.
Let's see. What else? What else? What else? Jelly Bean is coming to the Samsung Galaxy S3 the next few months. Oh, jeez. I'm glad I got a Galaxy Note. Next few months. Poland has it now.
And why it takes so long.
Should we talk about Violent Acres?
Have you talked this to death, Leo, on your other shows? Or
you know what? We have not. This is the first time we've brought it up. I probably will bring it up on Twit, but I've been saving it just for you.
Wow.
And the story is actually in process. It's breaking because Reddit just defended him.
Yep. Well, right. They defended his right to
free speech.
Free speech.
Actually, that was a leaked memo, so I don't know.
Well, it was a leaked discussion on a forum from the current head of Reddit. But yeah, two points of principle coming out in their view. I think there's a third, but the first is that he had a right to anonymity. They don't like doxing. They don't like outing anybody who's anonymous. One, two. However, Reddit was wrong in their view to block links to Google. Hey, you want free speech? Gawker, you don't want Gawker's free speech. I would say there's a third question going on here, which people are really talking about, is that Reddit has to decide what its culture really is. Yes, there's free speech. Yes, there's anonymity, but a government should respect that, but a private entity can decide whether it has standards or not. And it's censorship for the New York Times not to put up pornography. The New York Times can say, we put up what we choose to put up in our space, and that's I put up what I want to put up on my blog. I don't put up everything. No one should force me to put up everything. I understand.
Maybe can I give some background before we get too deep?
Yeah, should we describe what happened? Yeah, maybe.
So there's a guy, and I'm not going to say his name. He was outed 5 days ago on Gawker as a pretty virulent troll on Gawker, who is on Reddit, who is both celebrated on Reddit by a lot of people, was given some power, it looks like, by Reddit, but was creating subreddits about, you know, sexy pictures of underage girls, creep shots, for instance, pictures of women unaware that their photographs have been taken, some pretty creepy pornographic stuff. Pics of dead kids, for instance.
Yeah. Pictures of dead teenage girls.
And so Gawker revealed who he was. He lost his job as a result. His wife said, oh, it's okay.
He's got an interview on CNN, I think, tomorrow.
So the guy's a creep, at least from what I read. I mean, and again, that was Gawker, so who knows? But the guy's a creep.
You don't have to tell us that, but by what he did on Reddit, it reads out the creep meter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pretty horrible. But then there's more to it, because it sounds like sometimes he was setting up these subreddits to kind of move traffic. He was being used by Reddit to kind of control the creep factor on Reddit. Now, we got to point out, Reddit's owned by Condé Nast.
My old bosses, and full disclosure, I still work with them.
And, I mean, this is a very prestigious mainstream media outfit here. Now, they've left Reddit pretty much alone.
Yeah. And Reddit just hosted an AMA with President Obama. I mean, Reddit has had some seriously mainstream events happen so on it.
Reddit, Alexis Ohanian, the co-founder of Reddit, is now running a bus tour across the middle of America to defend the internet and speech, all of which are wonderful things.
He's running for my old job, president of the internet.
Yeah, Reddit has done some amazing things.
I love Reddit. And in fact, I didn't really know much about this seamy underbelly. It sounds worse than 4chan.
It's pretty awful. Yeah.
And Reddit's core value is free speech, that people can say, that protected speech, that people can say what, as long as it's not illegal. So, you know, he would set up the subreddit Jailbait, which was pictures of underage girls in revealing outfits, bikinis or whatever. These are pictures that he found on Facebook. But if there was actual child pornography, like you know, explicit child pornography, illegal child pornography, he would help moderators take that down. So he had this kind of uneasy relationship with Reddit where he would just toe the line, just push the envelope as much as possible, keep it legal, but just horrible, hateful content.
He told Gawker, "I just like riling up people in my spare time." He's a classic
troll.
Yeah.
Definition of a troll. Yes. Yeah. And if you compare that once he was outed to his blog and his Twitter feed, is the fraud of this is, "Oh, I'm Mr. Nice Guy next door neighbor," and blah blah blah. It was the anonymity that provided the cloak for his true trollishness to come out.
But what do you do about this? I mean, if he committed illegal acts, that's different, but it sounds like he skirted illegality.
Right. So I don't think the government should go after him, but I think Reddit has to decide whether it has standards.
Yes.
And right now, the only standard is everything. And that's a right to do. They can do that. But then I will judge Reddit accordingly. And I will say that it is a haven for trolls and scum buckets. Right.
Yeah,
Right.
Go ahead. I was going
to
say.
No, and so just as he had a right to try to use his anonymity, but so did a reporter, even in an overwritten, overlong story, have the right to come along and say, "Well, I'm going to tell you who this schmuck is," and let everyone decide what they think of him. The problem here is we have to protect speech. We have to protect anonymity as a protection of speech for people who are vulnerable, for whistleblowers, for people who live in oppressive regimes. That's all important. But just because anonymity exists and free speech exists doesn't mean that you are freed from responsibility for our reaction to your speech. So I can stand out on a street corner and say homophobic or racist things. I'm allowed to do that in America. God bless America. But you can walk by and you can call me a schmuck for doing so, and well, you should. That's what this is about to me.
So he should be allowed to continue to do what he's doing?
No, I think that Reddit has to define its own standards of civility. And it has. And I don't very much like those standards of civility. And that's a problem. So Reddit does wonderful things. It's a platform to do great things. It doesn't want to be in the position of censoring. So it makes the standard simply illegality. So if you come
That's their choice. That's Reddit's choice.
That's Reddit's choice. But so if they came on and they had, and maybe they already do, I don't know, but a horribly homophobic, legal but awful, homophobic, screaming bad words about people, awful things, outing people who don't want to be outed, making fun of them, subreddit, let's say if that exists, they
sure
can.
It does.
But what do I think of Reddit as a result? I think that it's not terribly responsible. And maybe it's the old fart in me coming out. Gina, what do you think?
No, I completely agree. I mean, one of these subreddits was pictures of men beating women, right? So,
right.
You know, that's so you have to look at Reddit and say Reddit's decided that it's more important for them to protect a 38-year-old man's anonymity rather than protect, you know, 16 to 19-year-old girls who posted a picture of themselves in a bikini on their Facebook page, to put those photos in a totally hypersexualized context. Sure, he has the right to do that, and Reddit has the right to protect his right to do that. But that's a community choice. Like, that's a choice that Reddit made about the way that they're going to run their community. I honestly have a totally different view now. I mean, is that a community that I want to be a part of? Not really. And that's a choice that they made. Like, this isn't a legal issue. You know, it's not legal free speech. Like, this is Reddit is creating this community. They're creating this space, and they're deciding what's important to them. What are their values? And their values are free speech over this kind of just absolutely odious content. That's their right to do that, but it's up to everyone else to decide whether or not what they think about that. And I mean, Gawker outing him. I mean, Reddit is, you know, Redditors are outraged that this guy got doxxed, you know, that he got outed, and how dare Gawker. But Gawker, that was a journalistic.
Yeah.
You know, their rules don't extend to other communities on the internet. Gawker can do whatever they want. Reddit can do what they want. Gawker can do what they want.
But he didn't do much to protect his identity, by the way.
No, he did not. There are pictures of him at Reddit meetups. It wasn't that hard for someone to track him down, but it was such an enormous betrayal to the Reddit community because this is, you know, anonymity is so, you know, important there. And that's fine within the Reddit community, but... You know, this is
so any forum, and Reddit is basically a forum, and I've run forums, has terms of services and has the right to post them and make their own decisions. On all the forums I've ever owned or run, we've banned certain kinds of behavior, including all of that, mm-hmm. and moderated it quite heavily. There's no, I mean,
yeah, I
what is know. Has Reddit or Condé Nast responded to this in any way publicly?
I suppose I should disclose my old boss, emailed me about it like a year ago, kind of asking my advice. And I don't even know what I said back because it's a very tough thing. I believe in free speech. I believe in anonymity. I understand the openness of a platform. I get all that. And I don't think that at the time I understood where the boundaries are. What this whole episode has done, I mean, it's just like when devices all got hacked and we saw, aha, somebody pushed it too far and we know where it goes. And now we have a discussion about it. The discussion is valuable. Too bad somebody got hurt in the process, but the discussion is good. I think it's where we are right now. I didn't know where my lines were now, but I think my stance is what Gina just said is that, fine, they can do what they want. No one should stop them. The government shouldn't stop them. No one else should stop them as long as it's legal. That's the whole point. Legal is legal is legal. But we will now judge Reddit and not just its platform, but also, very importantly, its members and its community on the basis of the company they keep and what they do. Right? Now, if you're Reddit and the value you have is your platform and the openness, which is absolutely true, and which God bless Condé Nast, they have enabled. Right? It's a very unmedia thing to do what they did with Reddit, to allow it to be free, to allow it to be that. So the problem I have here is not the platform, it's not the technology at all. It's not the ownership at all. It's not the management, except for what they did with Gawker links, which I think is abhorrent and stupid, and they even know that, right? Mm-hmm. The judgment here is of the users atop the platform, the community that has taken over Reddit, that has done wonderful things with it in some ways, but then tolerates and chooses not just to tolerate, but to protect this behavior. Okay, go have your party somewhere else. Thanks. I'll have my beer over here.
Yep, absolutely. It's all about community values.
So we should just stop using Reddit.
Well, I mean, you know, that would sound like a boycott, and I'm not saying that. If something neat comes up on Reddit, will I not listen to it? Okay. But it's what I say on my comments.
Well, let me put it this way. Many of our shows use subreddits. So are we now guilt by association?
Well,
Yeah, it's hard to say, right? Because Reddit's a big community. There's lots of Redditors. it's tough. I'm not a huge Redditor. If I was, I would definitely question whether or not those values, you know, reflected my values, whether or not I felt comfortable being in a community where pictures of women being violently beaten, like where that's okay. I wouldn't feel safe in a place like that. And I wouldn't want to do a full-on boycott. I'm going to run into Reddit links. Reddit has done some amazing things, as we said earlier. But I don't know, Leo. I don't know if you should move subreddits. What shows do use Reddit to
TNT uses it heavily, but many of the other shows do. We were talking about using subreddit for Twig.
Yeah, I mean, we've already grabbed all of the subreddit locations. So,
I'm going to move slow on that. I can tell you that right now.
That's a very good case in point. Right, we admire the technology. We admire the openness. We now see this. Right, I think there's two things here. I think one is that if you were a Reddit user, Gina, there's no law within Reddit that says that the troll protectors have to win the day. Right, if it is truly a community, then members of the community can stand up and say, "Whoa, no, you're wrong about that. We're gonna change the culture of Reddit." Based on this case, and we're going to learn from
that's it. Not what happened. However, it was quite the opposite. You know, a lot of the Reddit community was upset that he was doxxed.
Right, precisely.
So, and banned, you know, links to Gawker, et cetera.
But is that right. Is that a statement of what the community is? Not necessarily. People can speak up. So there's kind of a militancy in the other way that shuts down those voices who might say otherwise. So I'm not a Redditor. And so I'm just going to stand back and say, as I say to my people in the comments of my blog, if you're anonymous, I will pay less attention to what you say. You're free to be anonymous. You can say it. You might have a good reason to be anonymous. But just know, I have the balls to say what I say under my name. If you don't, I'm going to judge you less. I'm going to pay less attention to you. People don't like that, but I'm just telling you the way I judge it.
Yeah,
Gawker published the headline that... See, I think Gawker kind of doesn't like Reddit. When President Obama did the AMA on Gawker, the Gawker headline was President answers questions on what was it, racist teen photo site. Something like that.
Right.
Which I thought was a kind of a joke. Maybe not, though.
Yeah.
If Obama had known what was going on, or his campaign probably had known what was going on Reddit, it would have been very smart of them not to have anything to do with it.
Well, you know, someone in the chat room said, hey, Gina, you know, there are lots of pictures of horrible things all over the internet, but you don't not use the internet because of that. And I mean, Reddit is a huge community, and this is kind of the seedy underbelly, these subreddits, right? And do you just toss out an entire community or just write off?
Yeah, but you know what? It's not the internet. It's a specific site.
It's a specific site that has community moderators, that has leadership, that lays out what its values are and what it can be done there and can't be done there. So that's why I'm judging it a little more. In terms of whether or not to boycott or try to change from within, I mean, this is the question of every kind of change, right? You either work from within and try to evolve, or you toss the whole thing out and try to start fresh and start anew. I'm not an active Redditor, so it's hard for me to say. Reddit has enabled some amazing things. It's also enabled some really horrible things. I mean, I'm sort of horrified. You know, I'm just super sensitive to this stuff now, especially because I have a three-week-old baby girl. But it's like, I just can't, you know, I just have no tolerance for this kind of, you know, stuff.
The point you just made, I think it's a really interesting and right point. Isn't the difference between the internet argument and the Reddit argument is technology versus a community?
Yes.
Right? I don't think we have any problem with the technology of Reddit. We don't have any problem with the technology of the internet. We know that the internet does enable bad things. That's not the issue here. The issue here is the community came along and not just defended and protected this schmuck, but also then cut off the free speech of others and the right of their readers to learn both sides and to act on that. And they acted dictatorial within that community. And they can do that. They can take it over. It's a kingdom. But the problem we have there is not with the technology. It's saying that if that's the community you guys want to have, okay, you can have it, but not for me, thanks. And that would be a shame because Reddit does need things.
And, you know, the community is also a reflection of its leadership. I mean, you know, there was a private memo that was published that we have here in the rundown. I mean, one of Reddit's kind of the CEO, I think, says, yes, we hate this kind of content, but we protect this person's right to post it. And also said, you know, we shouldn't ban links to Gawker. That seems, you know, that's a bad idea. Although apparently moderators of different subreddits they can decide to ban Gawker links, and the community leadership or the people who run Reddit, the company, can't have any say about that. And that's just the way that they've decided to structure the community. But there is leadership that's structuring the community and leading the community. And the community, I think, is a reflection of its founders and of its values. And those evolve over time. But there are people at work, moderators, people in positions of power that help, you know, grow the kind of values that they want to see reflected in their community.
Is it like, somebody asked a good question, is the community of Reddit like the community of Facebook? Facebook, by the way, would never allow any of this.
No. Oh, no.
I don't know.
Twitter. Facebook, is it like Twitter? There's definitely reprehensible stuff on Twitter.
Well, here's the argument. Facebook is not run by its community. Reddit is run by its community.
Okay.
Right? And so, again, what we're judging is the community. And, again, I feel bad. I don't like to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It does great things. Most of it's wonderful. But would we want to associate Twig now is the question with...
Well, I'm not going to. But we're not going to do subreddits.
Well,
but
we wouldn't have asked.
The more it looks like 4chan, the less interested I am. But we make that choice. Those choices we make all the time. And I don't have any problem making those choices. It's not even censorship or... It's not even having an opinion. It's just like, well, I'm not going to stay away. I'm just going to stay away from that because I don't want to get in that, admired in that.
On me.
And I do love stuff. There's plenty of good stuff on Reddit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not an easy topic.
It's hard because as a Reddit user, and I do use Reddit a lot, there's definitely...
That's OMG Chad speaking, by the way, Chad Johnson.
There's definitely a sense that, well, this is them. This is the other people on Reddit. This is a different subreddit that I've never been to, that I've never participated in.
Me either. I didn't know it existed.
And, well, I mean, I did know that these things existed on Reddit. It feels very much like, oh, that one really loud, annoying kid is bringing down the whole class. Like, the whole class is getting punished because that one kid over there. Yeah. And the only reason that this gets bigger than just, oh, that those people over there are being loud is because of the community running all of Reddit. So now that loud, annoying kid is also the teacher of the class.
Oh, boy.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. Oh, boy. And I'll tell you, once communities start going in one direction, it's very hard to change. There's a lot of momentum behind it.
Well,
right, but this guy is not representative of Reddit. These
understand that.
Are not representative.
But should
of Reddit.
Reddit be protecting him or trying?
Okay, so let me do the devil's advocate truly here for a minute and turn it around. If we argue on this show against walled communities, if we complain about the control that Facebook or Twitter puts on what it does on behalf of its brand, if we want things to be open, then Reddit is a substantiation of openness. And if Reddit says there is no community control of the whole thing, there is no management control of the whole thing, then the crap comes along, but that's the definition of openness. Now, the problem is that Reddit proved itself hypocritical by banning the links to Gawker, because then it did do centralized top-down control, and it chose to do it against reporting as opposed to against near child pornography. That's where the real problem comes in here. I think before, we all knew there was crap on Reddit. Not as bad as this. Pardon me. But I think the problem was the hypocrisy of the Gawker ban in this. So Chad, to your point, it's a big platform. It's open. No one controls it. Thus, everyone controls it, and they all can do what they want in their own worlds. And that's the secret of its growth. I think that'd be a different story. But what we saw here was an outright protection of the scum bucket.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Gawker ban was the biggest misstep they could have ever made. If they're trying to defend the community or trying to dispel part of the community.
And merely saying, oh, yeah, we probably should have done that, I don't think.
No.
But what should they do going forward? Should they defend free speech? Should they allow subreddits that are not illegal but distasteful?
I would argue that you almost need a conventional. If this is a community site, you almost need a constitutional convention of Reddit. You almost need to say, folks, let's hash this out honestly. Let's not make this as if it's a done law of our universe. What do we think, people? And the problem is the loud voices that now say, no, protect at all costs, are hurting the Chads of the world who say, no, wait, there's something good going on here, and you ruined it for us, all of us. I think that if you're truly a community, then act like a community, and it's maybe not a democracy, but it's something close to it. What do you think?
I agree. A constitution of Reddit it seems like the only way to say here are the lines that cannot be crossed.
They have no terms of service.
I believe they do, but it's just it.
They probably say you can't commit an illegal act. Could I post, cracks on Reddit?
Like pirates, software cracks.
Software cracks. Could I do anything?
I mean, I'm sure that I'm pretty positive there's a good torrent Reddit, you know, that
was one where there was a crack code that was put on somewhere. Wasn't it Reddit or was it?
It was Dig.
It was Dig. That's right. What did Dig think of that at the time?
They pulled it down initially. It was very controversial. And then everybody in the world started posting it in Dig, and they could no longer pull it down.
Right.
So they gave up.
What they say here, maybe that's what Reddit would say, is, you know, hey, you Neanderthals, any effort to control this thing will fail, so don't try.
I guess what the issue really is Reddit is a new kind of beast.
Yes.
It isn't a forum that somebody's running. It isn't the internet. It isn't Twitter. It isn't Facebook. It's a new kind of beast. And we don't really know the rules for that yet.
I feel like it's a platform. And unfortunately, the platform decided to moderate it.
It isn't a platform. There are people running that platform.
Right.
There are people own that platform. It isn't an open platform. I think that that's one thing it's not. It's not Usenet. If some people are saying in the chat room, it's Usenet. It's not Usenet. It's owned by, it's a commercial entity owned by a company. So it's not Usenet.
Right. And so someone in the chat room pointed out that Reddit, the organization, did not ban Gawker links, that moderators
individual mods
Reddit,
did. Yeah.
Individual mods did, right.
Yeah. Well, no. I thought that the head of Reddit confessed that they briefly did it system-wide.
My problem is that article in Gawker is referring to private discussions that are not public in Reddit, and I don't know if those are accurate or not.
Okay.
And because we haven't heard a public statement from Alexis Ohanian or from Reddit or from Condé, we don't know anything. There Alexis are private statements that have been published by Gawker, but we don't know if they're real.
I think Alexis is on the board. I don't think Alexis is in management anymore.
Okay.
He left management.
So I don't think it's quite a platform, but I don't know. Maybe, you know, I'm not an expert on Reddit, so
Leo,
I don't know.
In that view, then again, this goes back to our Twitter discussions. Then are you saying it is impossible to have a privately run platform? That anything privately owned is necessarily walled at some height?
Well, you're responsible. If you're Condé Nast, frankly, you're responsible for every single thing that is on your servers as Reddit. Now, you can say, and I don't think it lets you off the hook to say, well, we let users create their own subreddits and moderate them. Fine, but it doesn't mean you're not responsible for it.
Well, what if it's a federated architecture, right? Which we talked about, the Twitter alternatives ought to be, or app.
That's different because that is open.
So if somebody takes over an app.net and does their own instance of it and puts up pure crud.
App.net has no responsibility for it any more than, you know, Evan Perdomo does for anything on status.net.
But it becomes this great thing for horrid porn. Is there not still?
So is that? Well, maybe I don't understand. Chad, is that the case?
No, but it feels like I think
it may feel like that. I don't know. But
I know. What I'm saying is simple users may feel that way because anyone can make.
This is our corner of the net. It has nothing to do with Condé Nast.
Exactly.
It's run by somebody else and nothing to do with anybody
else.
Exactly.
And so that's why you're seeing the community get outraged, you know, because they feel like that was their subreddit.
I would be,
after this discussion, I would completely agree that they're mistaken.
This is not covered by Safe Harbor, by the way. Reddit's a publisher, right? There's no question that Reddit is a publisher in this regard. Jeff?
Is it?
Well, if there's Safe Harbor,
YouTube?
then they would be right to say, hey, we just like YouTube says, hey, you know, we'll honor DMCA takedown requests. If there's something violating the law, we'll honor that. But otherwise, we're not responsible.
It gets fuzzy when the moderators of Reddit, who are at some of the highest levels, start to moderate all of Reddit. That's when it gets really fast.
That capability exists.
And I'm unaware if they pulled that link system-wide or just in the subreddits that were affected. I have not done my research on that.
So is Reddit like WordPress.com? Or is, which in my belief is not a publisher, is like YouTube? Or is Reddit more like a forum where they're a publisher?
Or let's put it another way, Leo. No. Is Reddit like WordPress.org, which is truly a platform?
It isn't because, because
right.
we know that because it's all of Reddit's content is hosted on Condé Nast servers.
Right. So WordPress.com, being similar in that sense, does have standards, right? I don't
know
what they are.
No, but absolutely. You're not going to see child porn on WordPress.com.
Well, child pornography is illegal. So
okay, you're not going to. Well, okay, that's a good question. I mean, Tumblr is an interesting example. Tumblr is a common carrier. There's lots of porn on Tumblr. There's stuff as bad as anything on Reddit. But we don't blame Tumblr for that because when you go to a Tumblr, that's somebody's responsible for that, not Tumblr. They're just providing a platform. Is Reddit like that?
Blogger has stuff too that to someone is offensive. It's not offensive to me,
right?
I don't know what their line is, but there's naked people on Blogger.
So this is really a question: is what is Reddit? And I think that part of the reason we lost Jeff. We'll get him back.
No. I'm just trying to get myself unpixelated.
Oh, okay. And so part of the problem is there are differing points of view about what /R means, and who's responsible. And see, I think of it as a forum, a massive forum.
Yeah.
But it's a forum to me.
I would say that it's more of a blogger or a WordPress.
If it's a blogger or WordPress, then that's different. I don't think you could have this. You wouldn't say, I'm never going to use Tumblr again because of the stuff that's on Tumblr.
But unfortunately, what happened was it'd be like saying blogger said, well, all links to this article
across
blogger have now been taken down.
That really is where they blew it.
There is no community of blogger. Each blog is individual. Maybe that's the argument about a subreddit, right? But there is no community of blogger that comes together and says and sets rules for all of blogger. There's no such thing.
Well, I'm going to table this discussion.
There's a personal publishing platform versus a social news site. I always imagine Reddit like Dig, a social news site.
Right.
Right? Yes. Like a meta filter.
Yeah, because you have one account on Reddit, and that's it. And you have the whole Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
But people have to let you into these subreddits, right? Are they private?
No, they tend to be open.
You can go in. So one account. So see, to me, that's a forum. That's not Blogger. That's not WordPress. That's a forum. You get one account, a Reddit account. You're on Condé Nast servers now. There's a ton of content. So I think people are fooled by the scope of it.
Yeah.
It's so big, it looks like the internet, but it isn't. It looks like WordPress.com, but it isn't. It's one place, one forum with a lot of horrible stuff on it. And I can tell you, if I ran that forum, I would be responsible for it all. And as soon as they site-wide pull links to something, they demonstrate that fact. They say, oh, we're doing
that. If they had not done that.
Yeah, they kind of muddied the waters there.
It did a lot, right? That's where it all comes down to me. And it shows the capability. If they'd not done, let's say they hadn't done that. Let's say all that happened was Redditors like crazy yelled and screamed and protected and cursed Gawker, but it wouldn't be the first, and whatever. We'd have a very different discussion, wouldn't we? What would we say then?
It is owned by Condé Nast. I'm sorry. Somebody's saying they're sister companies. No, sorry. Wrong.
Yeah, okay.
They're given a lot of autonomy. Condé Nast owns them. Could fire every single person there. Could shut it down tomorrow. That's not true. They have mods, just as we have chat room mods.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that lets them off the hook any more than I'm off the hook for what happens in the chat room.
You are legally.
I'm absolutely on the hook for what happens in the chat room.
No, you're off the hook legally.
I am?
Yeah, Section 230. Section 230
thank God. I don't like that chat room.
I was going to say, really, Leo? That's not good.
No, I think I am. Well, I'm morally, if not legally, on the hook. I'm morally.
No. You want Section 230. It's our First Amendment because Section 230 says it's the only surviving part of the DCMA. And I'm
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
And it says that you are not responsible for content that is created on your site by someone else. And the reason that Congress, even silly Congress, did that was so that if that weren't the case, if you were responsible for everything, you would allow no conversation because your liability would be too high. This is what allows takedown notices. This is what allows free speech on the net.
Right.
So Section 230 is very important. You are not responsible for your chat room. You choose to be, and that's your right to do.
So I do stand corrected. Reddit was spun off, in effect, from Condé Nast in at the end of 2011 and is now a part of Advanced Communications, which owns both Condé Nast and Reddit. So I stand corrected. So I should, instead of using Condé Nast, I should use Advanced Publications.
Which is the parent company.
The parent company. So they're sister companies. You're absolutely right.
Again, full disclosure here is that I worked for that company for 12 years and still consult on some basis for one of its divisions.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I work for Gawker, obviously, for many years as well.
And I know.
I have nothing to do with any of them. And never plan to.
I work for Leo.
I don't. And Chad is my minion.
But Chad's on Reddit.
I don't know what the right answer is. I'm not pretending to know what the right answer is.
All I think you've heard from Gina and me is that this caused us to judge the community by its actions.
Yep, exactly.
And that has an implication that we can't figure out yet. We can't grok yet. But there is... what goes around comes around. There is an implication to your actions. There's a responsibility to your actions. And the community has spoken by its actions in a way that does not speak well for them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I don't use Reddit heavily, but Reddit's like, oh, it's that community that does those great AMAs, right? That's like kind of one of the things that I love about Reddit. Oh, also, it's the community that protected that creepy guy. Like, that, it's just,
I should also point out, as somebody just did on Twitter, that if you go to gawker.com/upskirt, It's just as bad. So talk about pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah. Well, this is the other question. God bless him. Gawker is a troll as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's the funniest thing of all.
Yeah. Takes one or no one.
And so I understand why people on Reddit would say, well, screw you. I mean, Gawker, screw you. And you're out in this guy and you're as bad as anything. And we have this great community that's of real value. And yes, there's a seedy side.
There's a difference between posting Lindsay Lohan nude professional photo shoots, which got posted in magazines, and pictures of young girls who were just took an Instagram shot of themselves at the beach to show with their friend, you know, to share with their friends. I mean, there is a difference.
And like I agree.
I agree that Gawker is a professional troll. It's a tabloid, and it does take one to know one. And of course, this was all about attention, and this was a huge story for them.
Yeah, but to be honest, I mean, I think this was a legitimate story and a real, and look at the discussion it raised. So, I just don't know what the answer is.
I don't either. I mean, I think if I were Reddit, probably.
Well, you know what it shows? It shows how much goodwill Reddit has. Otherwise, it'd be like, well, God, get rid of that. I mean, there's a lot of goodwill for Reddit.
What about this as a solution for them? I thought about this some long time ago. You say, okay, there's a Reddit brand. There's Reddit stuff. It's pretty much open. If you're going to run something that we think is slimy, you know what? We will federate the software. You can run it. You can call it Zedit. And we'll open source the platform because there's really no business model anyway. And yeah, you can use it and you can do it. And we don't control it then. We're not responsible for it then, morally or legally or any other which way you want to do it. Okay. But we do have standards here at this community. And those standards are upheld by a community that has a voice in how that operates and isn't intimidated by a few members. And we'll figure out what those standards are. Now, that sounds like Pollyanna time and let's give you the Nobel Peace Prize. But it could turn around, too. Well, where is the line? What are the standards? Who's to say? Is a naked picture overboard?
Reddit,
I
didn't know this. Reddit software is open sourced, and you could run your own Reddit. You couldn't call it Reddit, obviously, but you could run your own.
Mm-hmm. And to finally bring this all around, I've been talking to people in the chat room who I also know use Reddit and have been following this story, and they say the subreddit moderators were only banning the article on specific subreddits, so it was not site-wide.
It wasn't site-wide.
So if the subreddit moderator had a problem with this, they would ban it from their subreddit.
By the way, not an illegitimate problem. They were saying this is different. This guy's being outed, and we protect anonymity. Right. And that's one of our core values.
And so they asked the admins to do it site wide, and they said no.
Ah, but this article outed this guy's, and he did lose his job.
Right.
So not that I want to defend the guy, but I'm just saying, if your core value is freedom of speech and anonymity needs to be preserved, then that's what they were acting in according to their core values, even if they felt it was reprehensible. It's very complicated.
It is.
It is. This is quite a story.
Yeah. Wow. All right. We had a good conversation. I don't know what the answer is, but we'll table it. We could talk some more about it next week. And there's been a great conversation in the chat room. Our subreddit in the chat room is going crazy.
Yeah, the chat room is going nuts, which is great.
Let's take a break. Come back with our tip, tool, and number of the week. I am going to talk about this ginormous phone. But first, a word from Squarespace. A great place to put your website, squarespace.com. If you're a photographer, an artist, I know that there are sites dedicated to photography sites. This is so much better. This is so much better. This is what you want to take a look at. Everything you need to make a site that's unique, that's yours, it's the hosting and the software. They'll even do the domain name for you with a one-year plan. They'll hook it all up for you, and I'm telling you, literally within minutes, you will have a gorgeous site. In fact, you could do it right now for free, no credit card needed. Just go to squarespace.com, click Get Started. You'll be using the new Squarespace 6. Their amazing responsive design. That means a site looks good on any size device. That's the modern way of doing things, not a separate mobile site. No, your portfolio, your blog, your business looks great on any device with one site. Take a look at the amazing templates by some of the best creative designers in the world. And that's just your starting point. These are not cookie cutter sites, because as soon as you start working with a template, you're making it all your own. Every site is unique, reflects your style, And you don't have to be a web guru to do it. Now, if you are an expert in HTML5 and CSS3 and JavaScript and JSON and things like that, you absolutely have access to all those tools. That's one of the things I love about Squarespace. SFTP, Git, it actually supports Git, so you can check in and check out your design updates. Look, I want you to try it free for 2 weeks. That's the first step. Just go to squarespace.com, click try it free. Import all your data from your existing site, including comments, images, all the SEO is preserved. Then, if you decide you want it, take a look at the pricing. Two plans. Standard plan is $8 a month when you buy an annual plan, $10 a month, month to month. So that's right, you can go month to month on this. $16 a month for the unlimited annual plan gets you unlimited pages, galleries, unlimited blogs, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage. If you're a photographer, $16 a month, and you don't give up control to somebody else, you absolutely control it. It's so fantastic. Would you try it free? Squarespace.com. And then if you decide to buy, all I ask is use our offer code so we get credit. Twig and the number 10. TWIG10. Squarespace.com, a great place for your next website. Time for our tool of the week, Gina Trapani.
Tip of the week, two-factor auth for Google accounts. I know, Leo, this is like one of the few things that you and I have ever disagreed with.
Well, I use it. Over the years. I use it. I just suffer with it.
You use it and you suffer with it because it's really a pain in the ass to use, right?
Yes.
You have to enter this verification code every 30 days and you have application-specific passwords and you got to install the app. And for someone who has multiple phones like you do, that's a total pain. It got a little bit easier. And I just noticed this myself last week. I'm not sure how new it is, but Google has added this idea of trusted computers to two-factor auth. So the next time that you verify, you have to sign in with two-factor auth with your verification code, there's a little checkbox that says, trust this computer. If you check that box, that means you won't be prompted for your verification code every 30 days anymore.
Does that mean on all of the apps on that computer or device, or just on the Google website?
I believe it's just the Google website.
Okay. I thought they had that already, so this is new.
So they used to have remember this machine for 30 days, and
right.
You could check that, so it wouldn't prompt you for another month.
This is
basically you check trust this computer, and you do that on across your different devices. And if your phone gets stolen, or if you're wiping your computer and selling it, or whatever, you go into your Google account. You can manage that list.
You revoke it.
Devices and computers. You can revoke that trusted computer. So it makes two-factor auth just a little bit easier to use because you just don't get prompted every time.
Right. And I loved Matt Cutts' tip, which is once you get the barcode, because the way you get Google Authenticator working on your phone is you scan the barcode, and that phone is now can be used with Authenticator and your Google account. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do this now that I got all the phones. I got my iPhone 5. I got my new Galaxy Note 2. I'm gonna take pictures of that same barcode. You could take multiple devices. So I'm gonna do it one more time. Matt told us that last time he was on. You weren't here, maybe.
That's right. She wasn't.
So wait, you take a screenshot of the barcode and then you.
Well, you could do that, yeah. Or you could just wait there and get all your devices and keep making Google Authenticator work on all the devices.
Oh, nice! I got to do that.
Yeah. Because I want Authenticator on more than one device.
Yeah, me too. And that was one of my problems. Just having it text me codes every time. That was so annoying.
Right.
Yeah, I'll do that. Great. Cool.
If you print it, does it continue to work? So they're saying they printed it or save it as a screenshot. If it continues to work, that's great. I just thought maybe once you close that window that didn't work anymore.
Mm.
Okay. Mm. Good tip. I turned it on because, of course, I want to be safe.
But your point about application-specific passwords being no better than just a regular single password.
Worse.
Well taken.
Than mine. 16 lowercase letters or case-insensitive letters. That's not very. Mine's much better.
Yeah.
But that's fine. It's still good enough. It's good enough. Jeff Jarvis has a number or two.
Let's go with this one. Glassdoor did a study of the average base salary for software engineers. And not surprisingly, Google came out number one at $128,000. Again, that's a base salary. Facebook near behind $5,000 less at $123,000. Hmm. The national average is $92,000.
I should
Amazon
be a software
up
engineer.
In, I guess, cheaper Seattle at $103,000. Apple, $114,000. And IBM is the bottom of the barrel at $89,000.
That's because you have to use COBOL.
That's because you're old.
You should get paid more if you have to use COBOL.
Though, in defense of IBM, I've gone through this before. I got a message this week from Jeff Schick, who is Howard Stern's tech advisor, and he has put in an IBM Lotus social network into Howard Stern's operation. So they're managing based on a social network now, which you can imagine.
Using
a
Lotus. Into that.
Yeah, well, no, I don't make fun.
What's that new one that we want to try that was picked MacBreak Weekly picked yesterday by Renee Ritchie? I want to try that. Now I can't remember it anymore. Chad and I said we should try this, and then we immediately forgot all about it. Chat room will tell us before I can find it.
I can't remember either. Start with a CH, I think. It was made by that one guy who...
Yeah, made by that one guy, that thing. Other thing. That did the thing, and he was really famous.
Glassboard.
Okay, is that right?
It was made by the person who made Campfire and...
No. It was made by someone... anyway, Glassboard. This would be better than Lotus Notes for Howard.
But, oh, it is Glassboard. Good. Yeah. We were right.
Yeah.
Or chat room.
Yeah. I want to try this. Android, iPhone, and on the web. And it's like Campfire.
So it's an internal social network for you?
Yeah, private social network for your business or whatever. Free. Cool. Well, maybe it's not free. It's free and freemium. But it's pretty good for free. I think this would be good. Now, we have Rosie. We have our own wiki. The repository of something. Rosie stands for something. Of everything you ever wanted to know about Twit, but were afraid to ask. My pick is my new phone, which I'm sure people are getting tired of hearing me sing its praises. I finally broke down and I ordered the European unlocked version of the Galaxy Note 2. You remember, I loved the Galaxy Note, but I replaced it with the Galaxy S3, which I replaced with the iPhone 5, which I've now replaced with the Galaxy Note 2. This was all planned obsolescence. Every 2 months, new phone, needed or not. But I actually love the size of this. It's 5.5 inches. And I'm going to just show you a couple of things it does that you will not believe. For instance, it has windowing. So when I press and hold the menu button, a little side menu pops up. And I can, let's say, I could put maps in this one. And I can put, Chrome up here. I don't know why you'd want to do that. But now I have a window with Chrome and the maps. Or I can put... Maybe you want to use the S note because this has a great little stylus here. So I can drag now the S note. I've got a window on top of the window, or I can drag the S note into it like this. And then let's close that. It's very confusing. Okay. S note is cool because this is a pressure sensitive stylus. It does handwriting recognition. It does a pretty good job. Very fast, 1.6 gigahertz quad-core processor and 2 gigs of RAM, which I'm not sure which makes it fast, but I bet the lots of RAM certainly doesn't hurt. Beautiful screen. It is not as high a resolution as the original Note. It's 1280 by 720 instead of 1280 by 800. So the pixels per inch is actually lower than the original Galaxy Note. But it is not a pentile screen, and so you might say it really is higher resolution. It's a gorgeous, bright, easy-to-use LCD screen. What more can I say about it? If you have fat fingers like I do, you need a big phone, and this is it. Now it looks like it's
a pocket check, Leo.
Yeah. You want to see me put in a pocket? I got Captain Kangaroo pockets. It goes right in my breast pocket right here like that. Easy. There's plenty of room. In fact, it's no wider than the old Galaxy Note, just a little bit taller because they go edge to edge more on the screen. I really like this. As an old person with fat fingers, it really solves my needs. It does not flicker in real life. That's just an interaction with our cameras. I'm not sure why that's doing that.
The windowing is crazy. So
is that wild?
Yeah, it's kind of...
The tabs, the Note tabs do that as well. It's something new that Samsung's doing with some of their newer... things. What else do I like?
Yeah, I saw there was a commercial at some point. It was like, well, you can text while you're watching a video.
And that's kind of weird. Like,
would I ever want to be texting?
Well, yeah, I would have last night when I was watching the video in the Turnpike rest stop.
Watch the debate one window and tweet in the other.
Well, and I'll tell you, people laugh at a stylus, but the idea that if somebody gives you a phone number And instead of breaking out the keyboard, I could just write it, and it's easy. I mean, I can read my own handwriting. And it does have, this is really weird, but it has actual text recognition. So I can also do it. I don't know how good it is. I think it's pretty good. See, 5, 5, 5, 1, 2, 1, 2. It's actually pretty good.
Is there a place on the phone to keep the stylus, or is it
yeah.
you just have to carry that separately?
No, and in fact, there's a nice little feature that if you leave the stylus behind, it beeps at you.
Really?
And if you never use a stylus, you never even have to know it exists. It fits very nicely flush into the case and is nice and firm in there.
Very nice.
The stylus is much improved, by the way. The ergonomics are much better than the Galaxy Note. One reason to upgrade, the button's easier to push. It's got a soft plastic S Pen now. Is really, I think, nice. Look, if you want a big phone, this is it. And I think it's a great phone. Running Jelly Bean, which is nice. So Google Now. Look how nice Google Now looks on the big screen, you know. And oh, it's
you know, what's amazing is that one of the first tablets to come out was Dell doing a 5-inch.
Yes, and it was terrible.
It was, but they had the right idea.
Because it was clunky and big, but it was the right size. I like this size a lot.
Yeah.
I have to say, this is my daily driver. I gave up on the iPhone 5. Too hard for me to type on. I've nicked the heck out of it. I'm going to wait till I can get a case for it, for one thing. It's nice, but it feels old-fashioned. It's my parents' phone.
I'm loving my Android stuff.
You're loving what?
Android stuff. Loving
Android's, it. I tell you, with Jelly Bean, Android has really come of age.
And here's the other thing. I went last week and I bought, unfortunately I had to return it because it was a broken open box unit, but I bought a Chromebook.
Oh.
And I'm going to go back and do it because I really want to see, A, what life is like fully on Google Apps, and then B, is for an educational purpose, you know, would it really be usable to teach students?
Cool.
I should let you know, I did order a Surface, Microsoft Surface tablet, and I will have it
in
9 days, 26th, it arrives, along with the keyboard. So I'll show you the following week on Twig.
Does it really change? Have you played enough with the early versions of Windows 8 that it really changes? You don't have to go searching for things and doing all the wacky stuff you have to do with Windows?
Worse. No. In fact, I think Windows users are going to be baffled.
Oh, no.
What if you're a Mac user? You haven't been on Windows in years.
Then it won't make any difference. It's just a different interface. It's very different, though. And there's a lot of, I think the problem, and I just saw a usability test with Nielsen Norman, where they said the real problem is there's a lot of mysterious commands, hidden mouse movements and things that people just don't get. I think sophisticated users might like Windows 8. It's certainly grown on me, but I have a feeling it's going to be really problematic for a lot of people.
They're also doing something very interesting, which is that they are including news in Windows 8.
Yeah.
And so they're licensing content from major media companies. Yeah. They have editors that are working
people.
On this.
Yeah. No, I think they're really, this is a tablet. Even Windows 8 is tablet-y.
Yeah. So, and I got to say, I went to Best Buy and I played with a touchscreen laptop for Windows 8. And I do like a touchscreen laptop.
You'll need it. Yeah. You'll want it anyway. You won't need it, but you'll want it with Windows 8, I think. And that's why I got the RT tablet. I'm really curious as to how that works. It's not, you know, there's very little RT software, so I don't know what that's going to be like. But I hope it doesn't join the playbook and the Zoom and all those other bad tablets that I have.
I do want to try that keyboard.
Yeah. Well, come up here.
Yeah, I'll come up.
All right.
Sounds good.
Gina Trapani, you can find her. She's easy to find. Smarterware.com. I'm sorry, .org.
.org,
and
yeah.
ThinkUp.com.
ThinkUp.com.
And, of course, here every Wednesday afternoon, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time.
Great show, as always.
Yeah.
My favorite hour of the week.
I really enjoy the conversations we have.
I do too.
Yeah. Me too.
I learn a lot. Not only from you guys, but also from the chat room screaming at us. This is easily the show where I learn the most. That's thanks to you, Gina, and to you, Jeff Jarvis, professor
of
journalism.
Because you've got some great shows.
I know. Oh. I work with smart people, and don't tell them I said that. But I do learn a lot from the show. Jeff Jarvis teaches journalism at the City University of New York. He's also the author of What Would Google Do in his new book, Private Parts. You can read his blog at buzzmachine.com.
And this week, I'm not pink, but I'm pixelated, and I apologize.
No, I don't mind the pixelation. You're taking it much more seriously than I am.
I hate it. I like to see myself crisp.
And we should also mention Gina has a show on 5x5 at 5x5.tv called...
In Beta.
In Beta.
Yeah, with Kevin Purdy. We do it on Tuesdays.
Yes.
Yeah, check it out.
And I want to talk to both of you about doing more shows on the Twit Network. We'll be in touch.
Oh.
Did you get your raise?
Oh, did we?
Oh.
You'll see.
Oh.
I'm not gonna say, I shouldn't have said anything.
I'm going to dance down pleasant, my mailbox.
It's not like jump up and down. It might have been a pleasant surprise.
Leo, whatever you give us is a pleasant surprise. I mean
absolutely.
Well, the show's doing pretty well. So we just thought, you know, what we do, we just every quarter or so, we adjust the host fees just because we want to reflect the revenue.
Can I quit my day job yet?
No.
Thank you.
I didn't mean to get your hopes up there. It's $1.50 and a Chipotle gift certificate.
I can bootstrap my startup?
No. I didn't say raise. I said raisins. Raisins. I'm sending you all dried fruit. And a free playbook. Thank you, Guyver and Kevin in Dublin, for those jokes. I have joke writers in the chat room. If you want to join us, we'd love to see you. 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2000 UTC on twit.tv. But you can always get audio and video downloads after the fact. Our on-demand versions are always online at twit.tv and wherever that her podcasts are aggregated. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you next week on Twig.